You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Good morning. We're going to start off this morning with a look back in time. See if you can recognize any of these people. How about right there? We might need to, can we turn these lights off at all, maybe? I don't know, maybe not. Okay, how about the next one? How about those people? Recognize them? And what about the next one there, Sarah? How about them? How about this next one here? Oh, how about that? That's nice, right? Another one, Sarah. Let's see another one. Hey, look at those people. How about it? And then how about this last one? There we go. And then go one more time here so we can see them all together. What do you think of when you see these pictures? Because I can tell you what I think of. I think of happiness and excitement and joy. The anticipation of everything we hope our marriage is going to be. The beginning of our happily ever afters. Living on love. Love is all we need, right? Kissy, kissy, smoochy, smoochy. I love you, Pookie. You too, Snookums. And we don't use those terms, just by the way, okay? But life has a way of interfering with the excitement that we feel for each other in those early days of marriage. The wedding's over. We get back from the honeymoon. And then we jump into real life. So how do we maintain this level of joy and excitement for our spouse in the midst of life's stresses, in the midst of life's difficulties? And why is it even important that we make that effort? That's what we want to talk about this morning. So today's point is titled this, Wise Up and Rejoice in Your Spouse. We're going to delve into this principle. It's going to be found in Proverbs 5, so that we can return to rejoicing in our spouses. And don't worry, students and singles, I've thrown some golden nuggets in here for you as well. But this rejoicing in our spouse is not the same thing as being happy with our spouse. You see, happiness is a reflection on how we feel. It depends on our circumstances. Rejoicing is different. It's an intentional choice. It takes effort. And rejoicing is something that we can do no matter what is happening around us. In fact, rejoicing is something we should do despite what is happening around us. And I'm not an expert on marriage. But Steph and I celebrated 25 years earlier this year. Woo-hoo! And we still like each other. And we like each other a whole lot, don't we? Yes, we do. So I do believe I have at least a little bit of wisdom to share with you. Also, Steph and I are pretty open with people about what has and hasn't worked in our marriage. And there's plenty of each. I can tell you that marriage is really tough. But it can also be the most amazing experience we have this side of heaven. So my prayer is that you're going to leave here this morning challenged to do everything you possibly can to rejoice in your spouse. So just a few things to know. Let's put the verse up there this morning. Here's what the verse says. We're going to focus on two of them, actually, Proverbs 5, 18 and 19. And they say this, let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. She is a loving deer, a graceful doe. Let her body satisfy you always. May you always be captivated by her love. Now, we're going to park here for a little bit. Solomon was the author of this proverb, and he alludes to having one wife, a wife of your youth. And that supports God's plan for marriage. But Solomon really didn't follow this advice for himself. We know Solomon had like 700 wives and 300 concubines. So, you know, maybe it was a do as I say, don't do as I do. Or maybe Solomon said, learn from my mistakes. We don't quite know. But Solomon is specifically talking to his son in this proverb about rejoicing in his wife. But what I'm going to do this morning is we're going to expand this. Wife is going to become spouse. So rejoicing in your spouse. And let's break this down a little bit further. So it says, let your wife be a fountain of blessing for you. In the dry climate, like back in ancient Israel, water was a precious thing. It was a precious commodity. And a water well, would have been one of the most valuable possessions in an ancient household. After all, you know, you needed it to drink and to bathe and to wash things and to cook. So this idea of a fountain, which a fountain is flowing water, it symbolized this continuous source of life and refreshment. Rejoice in the spouse of your youth. The Hebrew word here is samach, and it means to be glad, to take pleasure in. And it's a verb, so it implies action. You're doing something. So we are to work to take genuine pleasure in who our spouse is and what our spouse means to us, the one we committed to spend our life with back in our youth. And then on to let your body satisfy you always. Listen, folks, the Bible doesn't shy away from the physical side of marriage. The Message version says it this way: don't ever quit taking delight in her body. I find this to be one of the easiest commands in all of Scripture, and I'm going to follow it till the day that I die, just so you know. Other things, may you always be captivated by her love. Captivated, the word shaga signifies a staggering gait, like, you know, walking, kind of stumbling along. The NIV version uses the word intoxicated, always with love. So basically, be drunk on love. You know, put those beer goggles on every time you think of your spouse. Right, Billy? If you know what that means. Okay, other translations. It was a song. Other translations use the word ravished, enraptured, always be exhilarated and delight in her love. These are all really strong words, but they represent just being completely overwhelmed with joy and love for your spouse. So to summarize, view your spouse as a source of life and refreshment. Be glad and take pleasure in your spouse. Don't quit taking delight in your spouse's body. Be drunk in love with your spouse. And if that perfectly describes your marriage this morning, congratulations. And if it doesn't, you shouldn't feel bad, because you're in great company. So, why should we rejoice in our spouse? What's the big deal? Why was Solomon so adamant about this to the point of telling us to be drunk in love with our spouse? Well, I think there's three things. Number one, it prevents the temptation of sexual sin. In other words, finding physical satisfaction somewhere else. Part of our rejoicing in our spouse means spending time with them, showing them affection, being sexually intimate with them. And all of this increases that physical satisfaction that we feel with our spouse. And when we're satisfied, when we're being fed at home, if you will, we don't have the desire to look elsewhere for that physical connection. Think of it this way. This is an analogy. If you've just eaten your favorite meal at home and your stomach is full, you're not going to be in the mood to go out to a restaurant and order more food. Similar principle. And this is the true context of the passage, actually. Chapter 5 is discussing the dangers of adultery. And Solomon was warning against the practice of seeking that sexual satisfaction outside of marriage. Now, some of the surrounding cultures at the time didn't think this was a big deal. I mean, men would have multiple wives, or at the very least be okay with the fact that they could cheat on their wives. So viewing adultery as a bad thing, which is what Solomon is doing in this proverb, wasn't the normal viewpoint. But Solomon feels so strongly about this that this is how he ends this proverb. This is how he ends the passage. And this is in verses 22 and 23. It says, "An evil man is held captive by his own sins. They are ropes that catch and hold him. He will die for lack of self-control. He will be lost because of his great foolishness." So someone who cheats on their spouse lacks self-control, and they're foolish. And we're going to discuss this more in a little bit, but having that physical connection with your spouse is so very important for both parties, but especially for men. And if we're not focusing that energy, that physical energy on our spouse, we risk focusing it on somebody else. And as a spouse, if we're not encouraging that physical connection or being open to that physical connection, we're making it more difficult for our spouses to avoid that kind of temptation. And temptations abound, right? Not only in person, but also virtually. It's so easy to focus elsewhere. And culture, our culture doesn't help this. It tries to make us think that being in a faithful marriage is boring, and that we're somehow missing out on life by committing to just one person. And culture also says that we deserve to be happy. So if my spouse isn't fulfilling my physical needs, then I'm just going to go off and find someone who will. What we know, and perhaps what Solomon learned in his lifetime, is that few things can wreck a marriage and wreck a family and wreck an entire life as drastically as marital infidelity. So, we need to remove the physical temptation by rejoicing in our spouse. And that resulting faithfulness, being committed to one person and one person only, will guard us from the heartbreak and the tragedy that comes from physically connecting with somebody else. Number two reason to rejoice in our spouse is because it produces the full potential of what God intended. When we rejoice in our spouse, we have the potential to experience God's original design for marriage, to be emotionally vulnerable, and to be spiritually connected, and to be physically free, naked and unashamed, according to Genesis. Think back to Adam and Eve in the garden, not Naked and Afraid, the TV show, okay? That's not where we're going this morning. And that potential is based on this. Marriage is not just meant to be an agreement or a contract. It's meant to be a covenant. And you've probably heard that term covenant before. In the Bible, we find that God made covenants with the people of Israel on multiple occasions. That included through Noah, through Abraham, through Moses, through David, and then the last covenant, the new covenant, through Jesus. Now, both a contract and a covenant are designed to reach a common goal. But there are some major differences between the two. Here's a few of them. You see, a contract says that if you don't do your part, then I'm not going to do mine. In my line of work, if I don't do the proper steps of an eye exam, then the insurance company won't pay me. I didn't do my part, they're not going to do theirs. That's a contract. But a covenant says, I'm going to do my part no matter what you do. A contract can be broken or ended if something better comes along, or if one side changes their mind. You see, if a company offers me a lower fee to provide the same level of service, I'm probably switching companies. But a covenant is about remaining faithful and true to those original terms. A contract isn't exclusive. Businesses can have various contracts with multiple different entities. I work with dozens of different companies. But a covenant, at least when we talk about marriage, is exclusive. Unless you're Solomon, but it's supposed to be exclusive. A contract is formed between two parties who may or may not have any real connection with one another. I don't go play pickleball with the CEO of Capital Blue Cross. We don't do that. But a covenant is personal. It's relational. A covenant sounds something like this. I, Justin, take you, Steph, to be my wedded wife, to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do us part. In other words, I'm going to do my part, Steph, no matter what you do. I'm going to love you and be faithful to you until the very end. You're my person, the only one I want to do this with. In Malachi, this is a great little verse. In Malachi 2, 14 and 15, we find this. The Lord is the witness between you and the wife of your youth. She is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. Marriage isn't simply meant to be a contract. It's not just a piece of paper. It's meant to be a covenant. All right, singles, here's your bit of advice about this. Until you enter this marriage covenant, you can walk away from your relationship. You aren't bound to that person. The whole purpose of dating is to find someone you want to marry. And if you're dating someone and you realize that that person isn't someone that you want to marry, you need to break things off. It needs to be ended. Because the longer you're in that wrong relationship, the less time you're going to spend looking for and finding and spending time with the right one. And the longer that you're in the wrong relationship, the more hurt there's going to be when it ends. And unfortunately, that hurt can carry over to future relationships. It can have a negative impact on both of you for years and years to come. And singles, what does it look like to be dating the wrong person? First and foremost, if they aren't a Christ follower, they're the wrong person. Do not missionary date. In other words, do not date someone who's not a Christ follower thinking that you're going to make them a Christ follower. Don't do that. And if they are a Christ follower, but they put their relationship with you before their relationship with Jesus, they might not be the wrong person, but they aren't ready for marriage. Their priorities are wrong.
they're the wrong person if they're controlling, if they always criticize you, if they're emotionally or physically abusive, if they always blame you for something, if you frequently argue and fight with one another, if they don't make you feel special and spend quality time with you, if you don't have fun together, we're going to talk about that in a little bit, if they expect you to make changes for them, but they aren't willing to make changes for you. If any of this describes your boyfriend or girlfriend, they are the wrong person. And you are free, and I strongly encourage you to end that relationship. I've told my boys this. Dating should be easy. And if it's not easy with that person, you're probably not dating the right person. When it comes to finding that right person, a pretty face and a smoking hot body aren't enough. But once you do get married and you enter into that covenant, you need to do everything possible to make that marriage partnership work. And not just work, but thrive. Because that's what God envisioned with marriage. This covenant becomes the foundation that we build our marriages upon. God created us with this capacity for deep emotional and physical connection. And a covenant relationship allows this. Each spouse finding their deepest fulfillment in one another. And once we grasp this, we're going to find the joy and the satisfaction and the delight that Solomon talks about in this proverb. Our marriages will become a source of blessing and fulfillment based on the covenant that we share. Number three reason to rejoice in our spouse is because it personifies the relationship between Christ and the church. God intended the relationship that we have with our spouse to resemble the relationship that Christ has with us, with his followers. In Scripture, Jesus is referred to as the bridegroom, and the church is called the bride of Christ. Now, of course, our marriages aren't perfect because we're not perfect. But if we are actively rejoicing in our spouse, we should want our marriage to reflect the relationship that Jesus has with us. So what does that high standard look like? A few things. Jesus knows us the best, yet he loves us the most. He knows the good and the bad and the ugly, and there's lots of ugly in our lives. He loves us completely, despite all of our flaws. He loves us all the time. And there's nothing that we can do to make him love us less. And we don't really grasp this kind of love until marriage. When we're young, we define love by that relationship we have with our parents and with our families. But you see, marriage takes it to a whole new level because of that intimate knowledge that we have with one another. We see our spouse at his or her best. We see them at their worst. And through all of that, our response should be, I know you more than anyone else, yet I love you more than anyone else. Fully known, fully loved. Christ also demonstrated what it meant to be a servant. This is illustrated when he washed the disciples' feet. He wasn't too proud to make himself uncomfortable for his friends. He was willing to be humble. And then he showed that to be a servant requires sacrifice. He was willing to suffer and die so we could spend eternity with him in heaven. And similarly, we are called to serve and to sacrifice for our spouse, putting their needs before our own. Andy Stanley says that we should be in a race to be last within our marriage. In other words, do everything that we can to put ourselves second to our spouse. We must be willing to give up some of our preferences, some of our wants, some of our dreams. We must be willing to make ourselves uncomfortable for the sake of our spouse. Even if our spouse isn't doing the same thing for us. But here it is. Jesus gave himself fully for us, even though he knew we wouldn't give ourselves fully to him. And in the same way, we are to give ourselves fully to our spouse, no matter what they do. In Ephesians 5:25, Paul says this, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and what? Gave himself up for her. And then lastly, Jesus wants us to actively pursue a relationship with him, to grow deeper in love with him, to find joy in being his bride. And in the same way, we should be actively pursuing our spouse. I'm never willing to settle for the relationship just as is, but always trying to delight more and more in one another. There's no such thing as a perfect marriage. I hate to burst your bubble. But we should commit to putting in the hard work to continuously trying to make it better. When your marriage resembles Christ's relationship with the church, that intimate love, that servanthood and sacrifice, active pursuit and delight, it's going to be noticed by those around you. And when people ask you, what's the secret? It opens the door for you to tell them what it means to rejoice in your spouse. It opens the door for you to tell them what a healthy, Christ-centered marriage should look like. And not only that, it might give you the opportunity to share with them about a God who loves them so much that he wants to have a personal relationship with them. So, why should we rejoice in our spouse? Number one, to prevent the temptation of sexual sin, to produce the full potential of what God intended, and to personify the relationship between Christ and the church. Once we understand this, the next step is to identify what is standing in the way of us rejoicing. So, what keeps us from rejoicing in our spouse? Like most guys, I'm a problem solver. I want to identify the problem, come up with a solution to fix the problem, and then I want to fix the problem. This isn't the best approach for all of marriage's challenges. Husbands, just so you know, sometimes your wife doesn't want you to fix it, okay? Just listen. But in this case, I think it applies. So let's talk about some problems that can get in the way of rejoicing in our spouse, and then some practical ways that we can overcome them. And for this application, I've actually asked Steph to join me on stage because I think it's helpful to have a female perspective on these topics. Greetings, Steph.
Greetings.
Give me a second.
Hello.
Okay. One problem that keeps us from rejoicing in our spouse is stress. I don't think I have to elaborate a whole lot here. Stress includes all of the challenges that life throws our way. Jobs, kids, yes, kids, you can be stresses. Bills, expectations, decisions, lack of time, lack of money, health concerns. Life has a way of weighing us down.
And it's hard to rejoice in our spouse when we're exhausted, whether it's physically, emotionally, or mentally. And let's face it, we only have so much to give, but unfortunately, usually our spouse ends up getting the short end of the stick. Also, stress can not only make it difficult for us to rejoice in our spouse, it can also make us a difficult person to be rejoiced in. I'm gonna share a story. It's a real, and it's fake. Just let's get that. Okay, it's fake. But there's this video of this woman standing outside this home, and she's like, we're on scene now. This just in, breaking news. We're at the home of a woman who just murdered her husband for walking on the wet kitchen floor that she just mopped. Oh, here's an officer. Officer, have you been able to arrest the woman yet? And he says, no, we haven't. We haven't yet. We're waiting for the floor to dry. But that woman just literally killed her opportunity to get rejoiced in because she was stressed.
One of the most stressful times during our marriage was my time in optometry school. We'd only been married for about a year when I started that, and school demanded an awful lot of my time, a lot of mental energy. It was really, really tough. It was exhausting. In fact, during my orientation week, one of the school administrators stood in front of our class and asked us to raise our hands if we were married. And there were six or seven of us that were married. And then she proceeded to tell us that by the time school would be over in 4 years, it was likely that half of us would be divorced. Why? It's because when life gets hard, when stress gets in the way of us rejoicing in our spouse, it can drive a wedge in that relationship that isn't easy to repair. So, what's the solution to stress? Here it is. Play together. Because we can't rejoice in our spouse if we're stressed. Please realize, playing together, having fun together, is not going to get rid of life's stresses. It's not going to get rid of life's challenges. But playing together will help us rejoice in each other in the midst of the stress. What does playing together look like? It looks like dates. As a couple, you need to get out of the routine and spend one-on-one time together. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It's whatever allows the two of you to have fun together. Maybe that looks like just being outdoors. Maybe it's hiking or fishing. Maybe it's going bowling together or antiquing. That is not Steph's idea of a date, I will just let you know. It could be eating out. Maybe it's just cooking in together. Maybe you're going to the theater. Maybe you're just watching a movie on the couch. Think of just make sure, here it is, make sure that whatever this is, that it's uninterrupted time with just you and your spouse. You need to get the kids a sitter. You need to put the phones down. Think back. What did the two of you do for fun before you got married? How did you woo each other? Do those things again. Now, I do have a confession about this. Steph and I are not good about scheduling regular dates. It's not that we don't love being together. We do, and we have lots of fun together. But our dates are more sporadic than they are planned. However, there is something that we committed to many years ago that we have done now for a number of years. And that is, every year, we go away together, just the two of us, usually twice a year. Most of the time, it's just for a night or two. And most of the time, it's not very far from home, maybe an hour or 2 hours away. We've even stayed just over in State College. And if you need ideas, we found some really cool places across the state of Pennsylvania. We'll gladly share with them or share with you. But here's the thing. It's not important where you go. It's important why you go. And that's to enjoy being alone with your spouse.
And really, getting away from the home and getting away from the grind as a mom is huge for me. And to be honest, it takes a little bit more pre-planning, especially when you have kids at home. So leading up to that getaway, especially when the boys were younger, was a little bit more stressful. And I'm like, why am I doing this? But then we get away, and I've got 48 hours where I'm mentally available to Justin. And it's just us. And we have so much fun. It's just freedom. You go away 5 times a year if you want. You can figure that out. But we do. We encourage you to go away at least once a year. Your kids are going to survive by being inconvenienced because their mom and dad weren't there that night. We do recommend leaving an adult with them if that's, you know, if they're young.
Yeah, you'll get in trouble if you don't. But your kids are going to benefit, right? They're going to benefit from parents who rejoice in one another. And time away helps to foster that rejoicing. So whatever this looks like for you, be intentional about dating your spouse. And plan to date each other forever. You should never stop making time for one another. Okay, so dating your spouse is one way to play together to overcome stress. What else? Here it is. Sex. Sex is a great way to play together. Listen, sex is a critical component of a healthy marriage. This topic can be a whole series by itself. And if you want to hear more about our views on sex in marriage, Steph and I spoke at length about this in our Marriage Works series back in February 2020. You can find that on the website. Students, you should probably hold off until you're engaged to listen to that one. But by encouraging couples to be intoxicated with each other's love, the Bible is showing that God is not against pleasure. In fact, he's all for it. He created it. He just wants it to be experienced in the right context. And I like this quote from a theologian by the name of Warren Worsby. And this is what he said. God created sex not only for reproduction, but also for enjoyment. Whoop, whoop. And he didn't put the marriage wall around sex to rob us of pleasure, but to increase pleasure and protect it. You are the only person your spouse can experience this with. Your spouse can have emotional connection and intellectual connection and spiritual connection with others. And we do, family and friends. But this physical connection, this physical intimacy, sex, is reserved only for you. And that's why it's so important that it be a priority in your marriage. Sex deepens the bond that we have with our spouse. And you probably know there's an emotional connection that happens during sex. But did you also know there's a chemical connection, a chemical bond? And this is really interesting. During sex, our brain releases a hormone called oxytocin. And this chemical promotes feelings of trust and closeness and attachment. It helps to strengthen that connection between a husband and a wife. Its nickname is the love hormone. Sex also releases other chemicals called endorphins. These are known to relieve pain and to boost our mood. So they're actually stress fighters. Who knew chemistry could be this much fun? Now, unfortunately, sex is often one of the first points of connection that suffers when life is wearing on us. When we're tired, when we're overwhelmed, when we're stressed. And for one of you, maybe for both of you, you often just don't feel like it. Not tonight. I'm too tired. I'm not in the mood. I have a headache. And that goes both ways. I can tell you that our sex life suffered a great deal when I was in optometry school. Stress interfered with my interest and enjoyment of sex. But I'll challenge you with an analogy that I heard here recently. I love this analogy. Sex is like going to the gym. Do you always want to go to the gym? No. Are you always excited to go to the gym? Nope. But is it good for you to go to the gym and other benefits? Well, absolutely there are. Do we feel better after going to the gym? Yes, we do. So go to the gym and go regularly because, you know, if you're only going to the gym once in a while, do you really see the benefits? Not usually.
And schedule it, just like you would schedule your gym time. Spontaneity is nice, but it's really not realistic once the stresses of life come in. And don't schedule it for when you know you're going to be tired. It's just not as good. Look, I don't know, put it on your Google Calendar, call it gym time, and if your husband's name is Jim, that works out. You might not feel like it, but the benefits are just so worth it. And I do want to say one thing about this. I realize, I work in women's health, I know that our bodies start changing, sometimes as early as in our 30s, and things aren't the same as they used to be. But this is such an important part of our marriage that we can't resign ourselves to letting our age win out. I have some things, I know some things that can help you. So if you're a woman and you're struggling with this, please, I'm serious, talk to me after. If you're a man, don't talk to me, talk to him.
But listen, my specialty is eyes, okay? So I can only give you so much advice. So we play together by going on dates, and we play together by having sex. What else? By conquering something. This one is so important, but it's so easy to overlook. You see, when we work together as a couple to complete a challenge or to solve a problem, we're creating a sense of purpose with our spouse. And as we do this, guess what hormone our body releases? Oxytocin. It's that bonding hormone, that love hormone that we just talked about. Statistics show that 85% of affairs happen at work. Why do you think this is? Well, let me tell you. What do we do with our coworkers? We complete challenges together. We solve problems together. So if we aren't intentional about bonding with our spouse at home in this way, this meeting challenges and completing projects, and then releasing that oxytocin, it makes us more risk of bonding in this way with someone at work. And this doesn't have to be anything extreme. You don't have to sit around and try to build a replica of the White House with toothpicks. You don't have to figure out a way for Penn State to not choke in the big games. You're going to bang your head against the wall on that one. You can keep it simple. Okay, what's that look like? Work together in the yard. Today, I think we're going to have to put a post in the ground for our mailbox.
Woo, we get a mailbox!
Organize or redesign a room together. For quite a while, Steph and I would sit around and do a crossword together. It's just anything that forces you to work together as a team towards a common goal. Do that.
This common goal, it can be anything from a redesign of a room or you're building something or even just, we're going to go hike a trail we haven't hiked before. One of the things we started doing since we've been going away is to challenge ourselves physically.
Outside the bedroom.
Within reason of our 40-year-old bodies. So, for example, we went to Massanutten and our condo was not far from the trail. And so Justin had the map. He's like, hey, you want to do the hike? Do you want to do the short hike or the long hike? We're doing the long hike because we're going to challenge ourselves. We take this hike. We get up to the top of the mountain. We're like kind of walking along the crest and we realize we're at the top of a ski lift. It was incredible because this is like fall, right? So it's not snow, and you're like looking at all. It was so cool. He looks at the map, and he's like, we're supposed to walk down this. And it was steep. It was rugged, and it went on forever. And you know what it's like when you're walking downhill, if you've ever done the 1,000 steps? It was like that times about 3,000 because we just kept, oh, my word. Like, it was crazy. By the time we got to the bottom, I think we still had about a half mile left till we got to our condo. We were exhausted, but we conquered it together. Suffering together and conquering together, it does something about just making that bond even stronger. And then you have stories to tell.
Okay, so stress is one problem that prevents us from rejoicing in our spouse. Another one is thinking that someone or something is better. This act of comparing our spouse or our marriage to others is really dangerous. And it's really easy to do in our online culture. We see the posts and the videos and the memes, and they show those couples laughing together, and they show them loving on each other. He looks like the perfect husband. She looks like the perfect wife. They probably have the perfect relationship.
When we see that, it's easy to think about all of the shortcomings of our spouse and all the ways that we're disappointed in our own marriage. Craig Groeschel calls this the 80-20 issue, where we're happy with 80% of our marriage, but instead of focusing on that, we're focusing on the 20% where we're disappointed. Then if we get distracted by this 20%, we can start comparing and saying, well, you know, I'll find someone prettier, or I'll find someone who's more romantic, or I'll find someone who makes more money, or maybe I could find someone who's, I don't know, 5 inches shorter.
Yeah, or someone who's 5 inches taller. But those betters aren't better for you. Why? Because they aren't your spouse. And as Sean said several weeks ago, when you're married to the right person because you're married. We can't lose sight of that joy that comes from embracing our spouse as our life partner. Rather than comparing, we need to focus on the bond that we've created because it's uniquely ours. So what's the solution to avoid comparison? Progress together. Because rejoicing in your spouse shouldn't involve comparison. And by progress together, I mean we need to grow together. Just as we invest time in our careers, in our kids, in our hobbies, whatever, we need to invest time in our marriage. We must actively seek ways that we can grow together as a couple. And then as we're committed to this investment, our marriage is going to reflect more and more what God has called it to be. And as it becomes more and more what God has called it to be, we're going to be less and less tempted to compare it to others. Why? Because we're going to be finding contentment in our own relationship.
It's been said that if you think the grass is greener somewhere else, then fertilize your own lawn. And that's what we're talking about here. Well, let's just fertilize our own lawns. See, growth in marriage means that something is going to change. And change is good. We should embrace that. If something isn't changing, then it isn't growing. You actually might be sitting here right now going, you know what, I can think of something that I'd like us to do differently in our marriage. Well, talk to your spouse about that later, because they might be sitting here thinking the exact same thing, or maybe they've got other ideas that are kind of popping into their head right now. Be willing to hear each other out, because a conversation like this could be monumental in your relationship. And I'll give you an example. It doesn't sound big, but I think it's huge. Years ago, Justin had a conversation with me, but I'll back it up to say he goes to work at 5:45 in the morning. I'm not awake. He gets home around 6, and he would get home, and I'd be cooking, or I'd be working on something with the kids, and he'd walk in the door, and I'd just be like, hey. He'd be like, hey. So he finally talked to me, and I'll just say we don't talk in the heat of the moment. So this was bothering him, and I didn't know it, and he did just come out and yell at me one day. We had a moment where we were speaking together, and he said, listen, when I come home from work, I feel like the dog is happier to see me than you are.
The dog is always happy to see me.
She's very happy to see him.
Yeah.
So I have competition, but I felt bad about that because I am his wife. I should be very happy to see him. And so he said, I'd really love it if when I came home, you would give me a kiss. It's our first kiss of the day, 6 o'clock at night. So I could have been defensive because I was working on stuff. I mean, it was legit stuff that was keeping me busy, but I wasn't defensive. I said, okay, I can do that. And so we started. It was a little awkward because it's like he asked me to kiss him. So when he walks in the door, I'm like, hey, here's your kiss. So it was a little awkward. At first, we're married. It should come natural. But after a while, it's like the one thing I look forward to when he comes in the door. And it's one of the best kisses of the day. But that was a conversation that I was willing to hear him out without being like, well, you don't know my side. No. Like, if this is bothering you, I want you to know that you're the most important person in my world.
So just a few ways that we'll challenge you to progress together. First and foremost, grow in your relationship with Christ together. Hey, talk about the point. Start with today's point. Go home and talk about it. Be active in a prime group together if you're not already. Pick a YouVersion plan, do it, and then discuss it. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of plans available. And then pray together. This is a crazy statistic. Here it is. Approximately 1 out of every 2 married couples will divorce. Okay? Approximately 1 in 4 couples who attend church together will divorce. But only 1 in 1,500 couples who pray together will divorce. Prayer involves you being vulnerable in front of your spouse and vulnerable in front of God together. And it might be uncomfortable at first, but in this case, the benefits outweigh the discomfort. Another way to progress together is to keep learning about each other.
Discover each other's hopes and dreams, your disappointments, where you're struggling, what makes you happy, what you're afraid of. Become comfortable being uncomfortable by sharing the things with your spouse that you don't talk with anybody else about. And Steph and I have gotten a few resources over the years. We have some books that are basically fill-in-the-blank questions. We have some question cards for couples. I think they're called Growing Deeper. There's a lot of different resources out there. I see them advertised on Facebook all the time. But when we go away together every year, every time, we take some of these things along. And then part of our trip is sitting down and going through some of these questions. And some of them are funny. Some of them are pretty serious. But just in small steps, those discussions help us to grow closer together by learning more and more about each other.
It doesn't even have to be as formal as, did you get the question card? Did you bring the book? We have a dog. She gets walked every single day. And I used to be the one that walked her every single day. And I guess during COVID, when Justin was home, he started joining me on the walk. It's a mile walk. We'd hold hands and talk for like a half hour. I always find it's easier to talk when you're actually doing something together than just sitting face to face trying to have a conversation. Well, that turned out to be so fulfilling for us that it's become what we do. He says, are you going to wait for me to get home to walk the dog? Yep, wait for you to get home. Or if I'm out, he'll be like, do you want me to wait for you to walk the dog? Yeah, wait for me to walk the dog. I want to hold your hand, and we're going to talk. And it's not always like a super serious conversation. Sometimes it's shooting the breeze, but we have solved a lot of the world's problems on this talk, on this walk.
Not the Penn State problem, though.
Not that one. We're still working on it.
No. Oh, do you want to talk
finally,
about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, good. No, good.
Yes, my turn.
Okay, go.
Finally, we progress together by serving together. Craig Rochelle says that marriage isn't just about love. It's actually about building a life and a ministry together. It doesn't matter if you serve in your community or you serve at church or you serve on a mission trip together. Because like we said earlier, couples grow together when they have a common goal and a common purpose together. So when our common purpose, though, involves our faith in Jesus, that grows our bond even deeper. Our first ever service together was as MCs of this youth retreat called Impact. It was huge. It's probably the largest stage we've ever been on. And it's kind of like a creation, but on a smaller scale. We were the MCs. I'm telling you, I said to him the other day, they have got to have video of this because it would be so good to show our children. Anyway, I'm pretty sure we were cheesy, but it was so much fun just working together, writing skits together, and just serving in that capacity. You know, we've also served in other multiple things, and I have to say that I am so excited to be writing the discussion guides with Justin now. Yeah, it adds one more thing for us to do, but to be able to do it together, it's incredible. Because, and I'm not sure if there's an actual name for what it does for couples when they serve together. But it rejuvenates our relationship. No question. If you need a little pep in your marriage, pick something and serve together. Serving together is so powerful.
And then just one suggestion. Don't wait until your marriage is sick to decide to progress together. Think of this as preventative care. We started reading relational books back when we were engaged, actually. We actually went to a marriage conference within the first couple of years of being married. And you don't have to progress alone. Steph and I have been part of, and we've helped to lead some different small groups discussing what a healthy marriage looks like. And you can be proactive in this. It doesn't have to be a church function. It doesn't have to be a sanctioned MC3 event. But if you want to do this together, get a group of friends together and do it. And if you need some help with what kind of resources are out there, talk to us. We have some of those resources. The key in all of this is grow together so you don't grow apart. So stress stands in the way of us rejoicing in our spouse. So does thinking that someone is better. And a third is selfishness. In other words, choosing to put ourselves first rather than putting our spouse or our marriage first. It's caring more about me than caring about us. Before we get married, it usually is about me, at least to some degree. As the late, great Toby Keith sang, I'm not going to sing it. I want to talk about me, want to talk about I, want to talk about number one, oh my, me, my, what I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. That was terrible. But that's not quite the context. Yeah, thank you. That's not quite the context of the song.
But that popped in my head when I was writing. Anyway, it is about me. It's about my dreams and my goals and what I'm passionate about. It's about my money and what's comfortable for me. But once we get married and we enter into that covenant, it has to be about the us. And that's a really hard shift to make. Our brain does not do that automatically. And I can tell you that I never thought of myself as a self-centered person growing up. But in the early years of our marriage, Steph often took the back seat to my ambition. Like I said, optometry school is tough. And a lot of times I put it before our marriage. But my mindset was that Steph just had to deal with it. And she felt pretty neglected during those school years. I missed out on an awful lot, and I have regrets about that. And I think someone else that was in her shoes might have walked away from the marriage because I wasn't putting her and our marriage first. I was focused too much on me. And this selfishness, this lack of commitment to the marriage, is the number one reason given by couples when they divorce. So what's the solution to selfishness? We need to prioritize each other and our marriage because we can't rejoice in our spouse if we aren't putting them first. You see, by making our spouse and our marriage a priority, we are actively choosing to rejoice in them. And some days we don't feel like it. And some days our spouse doesn't make it easy. But prioritizing is critical if we want our marriages to thrive. And a special note to singles again. If you can't say that you are ready to put yourself second to your marriage and to your spouse, you're not ready to get married. And if you aren't willing to compromise on some of your dreams and some of your desires, or to validate and support what your future spouse is passionate about, you are not ready to get married. If you know that you're still a selfish person, and we are, but you're not willing to change that, you are not ready to get married. Please don't. So, how should our relationship priorities change? Well, married or not, God should always be our number one. Because we need to focus on growing closer to Him, to becoming the men and the women that He has created us to be. And then before we're married, our number two priority is our parents, typically. Typically?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I must have the old version.
Maybe
okay.
You do. Okay.
But then we start dating and considering whether this person is marriage material. And we could talk for hours on this, and I know you guys would sit there and listen attentively. But I'm going to diverge just a little bit to this point, because I want to talk about one thing. And it's like when it comes to, one, deciding whether you're ready and deciding if your boyfriend or girlfriend is ready to take the relationship to the permanent level, I think you both need to be able to say the right thing when it comes to this. If you can both say about each other, I need you because I love you, and not I love you because I need you, you might be ready to consider marriage. We don't get married to complete each other. That is, Jerry Maguire was wrong, people. Because as sons and daughters of the Most High God and followers of Jesus, we are complete. We get married to complement each other, and that's complement with an E. Because complement means to add to something in a way that enhances or improves it. See, their love and their encouragement makes us want to be better. We want to be a better friend, a better wife, a better husband, a better mother, a better follower of Jesus, a better father. And when we combine their talents and gifts with our talents and gifts, we become unstoppable in the kingdom of God. So look for that. Look for your complement. Back to the topic. So prioritizing our spouse. Once you've found that person, you're going to spend the rest of your life with that person. Your priorities need to shift. Because once you get married, your spouse moves into the number two spot, and your parents drop to third till you have kids. Then your parents drop to four. But see, the spouse replacing your parents is all a part of God's plan for marriage. Genesis 2:24, it says a man is going to leave his mother and father and embrace his wife, and they will become one flesh. And this is more than a sexual reference. This is actually all of you and all of your spouse join together with God at the center. You leave your parents and cleave to your spouse. And the definition of cleave is to adhere to and be strongly attached to someone. See, you and your spouse have started something brand new. And this something new is what becomes your priority.
There's a pastor by the name of Mark Driscoll, and he talks about this. And he says that when we get married, we're not joining a family. I mean, we often say that, right? Hey, welcome to the family. But that's not actually the way we should be looking at it. When we get married, we're creating a new family. This means that where we spend holidays, where we live, where we go to church, how we educate our kids, how we spend our money, where we vacation, all of these decisions belong to us and our spouse. Our parents no longer get to have the most influence in our life. Their opinions and their expectations of us are no longer our priority. And every couple struggles with this to some degree. Steph and I had to make some tough decisions after we got married. Our parents lived in different states. So do you think that they always liked where we chose to spend the holidays? They did not. Did Steph's mom like the fact that I moved her from New Jersey to Central Pennsylvania? She did not. Did my retired school teacher mother like our decision to homeschool? She did not. But that was okay, because Steph and I had agreed on it. We didn't let our family's influence take the priority any longer. But, and this is a big but, even though our parents are no longer the priority after we get married, we should still be seeking to honor them. We still love them. We're not going to write them off. That's not the right way to go. And if they're Christ followers and they have godly advice to share, we should still seek their counsel. This doesn't mean going to them first when we have a disagreement with our spouse, because prioritizing our spouse means going to our spouse first with those concerns. And honoring your parents also doesn't mean that we have to listen to everything they say. But in healthy families, our parents still want the best for us. So we should still want them to be an important part of our lives. So to summarize, God is always first. Spouse is always second. Spouse is always before kids, even if it's a second marriage, even if it's a third marriage. Siblings, friends, work, hobbies, all of these people, all of these things are important and should be a part of your marriage, but they can't take priority over your spouse. Remember, where you spend your time and your energy and your money is going to reveal your true priorities. So spend time with each other. Do everything within your power to make your spouse feel special and loved, and that they are the most important person in your world, because that's what prioritizing your spouse looks like. So, play together, because you can't rejoice in your spouse if you're stressed. Progress together, because rejoicing in your spouse shouldn't involve comparison. And prioritize each other and the marriage, because we can't rejoice in our spouse if we aren't putting them first. Just a couple closing thoughts. Henry Ford once said, "Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right." If you're sitting here thinking, "There's no way I can rejoice in my spouse. She nitpicks everything I do. I can't do anything right. He doesn't appreciate me." Then you're right, and nothing in your marriage is going to change. But if you choose to find just one thing that you can rejoice in your spouse over, and that's where you start, and then you ask God to help you rejoice even more, your marriage will change.
On the flip side, if you're sitting here thinking, "I'm not a very easy person to rejoice in. In fact, I could see myself killing my husband for walking on the floor that I just mopped." You can change. You should probably change, actually. But definitely, start with an apology to your spouse and ask God to turn you into the husband or the wife that is most rejoiceable for your spouse.
So as a first step to returning to rejoicing in our spouse, you'll find some questions. I put them at the end of the rows. So as a married couple, you know, pick one of those up. Consider this your progress together homework. Please answer them honestly with each other. Obviously answer them with grace. And approach them with an openness to hear from your spouse.
Also, there's a lot there. You don't have to do it all in one sitting. I mean, you could be like, "Hey, let's meet, you know, for 15 minutes each night and cover one of these questions."
Also at the bottom, you're going to find there's actually two resources. Those are two sermon series, one by Craig Rochelle and one by Andy Stanley. They are excellent. Just Google them. I think they're 4 weeks each.
They're on YouTube.
They're excellent. All right, let's close our morning in prayer. God, we thank you so much for marriage. We thank you for the way it is supposed to represent the relationship that you have with us. We thank you for our spouses. And God, we know that we're just human. We know that we make lots of mistakes. But God, give us the ability to admit when we're wrong. Just give us the passion for our spouse to make us want to rejoice in them, to make us want to do anything possible to grow closer together with them, and through that, to grow closer together with you. Give us just the courage to speak up if there's something bothering us. Help us to be humble. Thank you. Thank you for our spouses. And for the singles, we just pray for them as they look and as they go forward in dating and eventually marriage. Just help them to be patient. Help them to take some of this wisdom and help them to get their marriage off on the right foot when the time comes. It's in your name. Amen.